Hello, welcome to Spirit, Arts, and Herbs, and Blessed Be. I'm Kim, ordained State of Ohio licensed minister, second degree witch priestess of Cabot Kent, Hermetic Order of Salem, Massachusetts, elder, Tribe of the Crow, Clan Boscedenham of Australia and Cornwall, England, degreed in social work, herbalist, and a decades-long student of Northern European witchcraft, West African Vodun and Obi, and comparative spirituality and religions. For more information about Spirit Arts and Herbs located in Northeast Ohio, find links to our website, podcasts, videos, and social media in the description. This is a basic introduction to the pagan holiday of Yule. There's a lot to cover here tonight, friends, so get comfy and settle in. This is a feel-good, happy, cozy, and also really fun episode. The 12 days of Yule begin the night before the winter solstice, which occurs this year on December 21st, 2025, and ends on January 1st, 2026. As always, to understand ourselves, our evolution, and modern day practices and beliefs, it is so very important to understand history. So tonight, let's have a look at this ancient holiday. The winter solstice is the shortest day and longest night of the year, the astronomical start of winter, when the North Pole is tilted farthest away from the sun. The 2025 exact time of the winter solstice is 10:03 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is where I'm located, on December 21st. At this precise point in time, the sun momentarily stands still before beginning to climb again. The word solstice literally means sun stands still. Then after this fleeting moment in time, the days slowly become longer and the nights shorter. Cultures around the world have celebrated the winter solstice for thousands of years. It's a celebration of the returning of light, leaving darkness behind. Many ancient people have seen this occasion as a time of death and rebirth. In prehistoric Europe, some cultures built structures that aligned with the solstice events and precisely captured the sun's light, some structures dating back over 5,000 years. But before I go any further into my discussion about world traditions related to the winter solstice and Yule, I want to share a little bit about my own ancestry. I'm a bit of a mixed bag, so I've been influenced by various cultures. I'm 31% Western European, primarily Southwestern German, hailing from mostly near Austria. 31% West African, of which I'm primarily Nigerian. 25% English, nearly all Southeast England, Belgian Low Country, 7% Central African, primarily Western Bantu, 3% Nordic Swedish, 2% Celtic Gaelic, Hebrides, the Western Highlands of Scotland and Southern Wales, and 1% Iberian Peninsula of Northern Spain.
So I am by no means an expert in the history and traditions of any of these regions. I'm simply sharing some of my personal experiences as well as teachings that I've received throughout my lifetime, as well as my own research. So I do not in any way intend to offend or misrepresent any culture ever. Not at all. So please do forgive me for any mispronunciations that I may do. And if you have any corrections, I do welcome you to share them with me. So thank you for listening and watching. The oldest solstice celebrations that we know of date back to Newgrange, Ireland, in the Neolithic period around 3000 to 5000 BC, the New Stone Age. A structure was built there by farmers, dated at around 3200 BC, in aligns so that the winter solstice sunrise illuminates its inner chamber for 17 minutes. Believed to be part of ceremonies for the return of the sun and the agricultural cycles. Newgrange was built with a light box so that direct sunlight would reach the inner chamber only on the winter solstice. Astronomical events were often used to guide farming activities, as they still are today, such as the sowing of crops and mating of animals. Livestock was slaughtered so they wouldn't have to be fed during the winter. So it was almost the only time of the year that there was a plentiful supply of fresh meat for feasting. Alban Arfan is the Druidic name for the winter solstice, meaning light of winter or light of Arthur in Welsh. It marks the victory of the Oak King, the new sun, over the Holly King, the new year, symbolizing the return of life and light. At Stonehenge, a structure was constructed between 3000 and 1600 BC. The winter solstice sunset aligns with its central axis, suggesting rituals to honor the sun's rebirth and ensure fertility. At Stonehenge, the Great Trilithon, the structure consisting of two large vertical posts that support a third stone set horizontally across the top, the heel stone, the single large block of sarsandstone standing within the avenue outside of the entrance of Stonehenge, and the avenue, an ancient avenue on Salisbury Plain, Wiltshire, England, are aligned to the winter solstice sunset. People still gather there today to watch the sunset and celebrate the return of longer days. And thousands of people gather here for sunrise ceremonies. So cool. Another prehistoric European site at Meshau in Orkney, built around 2800 BC, also features solstice alignments. In Brighton, the burning of the clocks tradition features lantern parades and beach bonfires. In the 8th century, the 700s, Bede, also known as Saint Bede, Bede of Yarrow, Bede the Venerable, an English monk, author, and scholar, wrote that the pagan Anglo-Saxons celebrated the festival Modranith, Mother's Night, at the winter solstice, which marked the start of the Anglo-Saxon year. Bede also wrote that the pagan Anglo-Saxons called both December and January Gilly, writing that the months of Gilly derive their name from the day when the sun turns back and begins to increase. And this is an old English form of the word Yule. The Battle of the Holly King and the Oak King. In modern pagan and neo-pagan traditions like Wicca and Druidry, the solstice is often celebrated as Yule, the winter solstice, a festival of light, renewal and rebirth of the sun god. Rituals may include lighting candles and or bonfires, decorating with evergreens, and holding ceremonies at ancient sites to honor the turning of the year. The Battle of the Holly King and Oak King is Celtic inspired, symbolizing the eternal cycle of the seasons. Light and dark, where two figures fight for dominance twice a year at the solstices. The Oak King rules the waxing, growing spring-summer half of the year, representing life and light. The Holly King rules the waning, dark autumn winter half, representing rest and introspection. At the winter solstice, the Oak King defeats the Holly King, ushering in longer days. The Oak King is often associated with the Green Man and is crowned with oak leaves. In many pagan rituals, participants will dress in costumes and enact this battle with swordplay, ending with the Holly King kneeling to the Oak King in defeat and passing on the crown. Really fun. Now then the Oak King shall reign until midsummer, also the which is the summer solstice and also called the Sabbat of Lifa. In many traditions, the Holly King and the Oak King are actually seen as dual aspects of the horned god, who is also sometimes referred to as Hearn or Cairnnos. Each of these twin aspects ruling half of the year and battling for favor of the goddess. And despite this eternal battle, one of this duality, much like many other things that we'll discuss, one of this duality cannot exist without the other in maintaining order and the cycles of nature. He is the god of the hunt and the forest, regarded as the old god of the witches. In Germany, the ancient Germanic traditions are of particular import to me, as I am quite a bit part German. The North Germanic people celebrated a winter holiday called Yule, the old Norse form of the word Yule. The Heimskringla. And I'm sure I probably pronounced that incorrectly. The best known of the old Norwegian king sagas written in Old Norse in Iceland in the 13th century, which is the 1200s, by Icelander Snorri Sturluson, an Icelandic historian, poet, knight, and politician, and commonly thought to have authored or compiled portions of the Prose Edda. Describes the Yule feast as having been hosted by the Norwegian king Hakon the Good, who lived between 920, around 920 to 961 AD. According to Snorri, the Christian Hakon moved Yule from midwinter and aligned it with Christmas. This led some scholars to believe that Scandinavian Yule originally was a sun festival on the winter solstice. But modern scholars generally don't believe this, as the medieval Icelandic midwinter was about 4 weeks after the solstice. So, during the Christianization of the Germanic people, Yule was just incorporated into the Christmas celebrations, as we see quite often. So again, myself being 31% West African, most of which Nigerian, our West African ancestors have a rich tradition of celebrating the winter solstice. This festive time is filled with colorful decorations, joyful dances, and beautiful works of art, showing the deep connection of our ancestors have with nature and their culture. In Africa, people gather in communities, creating vibrant decorations using natural materials like colorful fabrics, flowers, and handmade ornaments. These decorations light up their homes and public spaces, making everything feel warm and alive. The beauty of these decorations reflect their joy and gratitude for the cycles of nature and the blessings of life. One of the most beautiful aspects of these celebrations is the dancing. Families and friends come together to sing songs and dance under the starlit sky. Drums beat in rhythm, and the dances tell stories of the ancestors, their struggles, and their victories. Each movement is a way to connect with the past and honor the spirits of those who came before. I would love to go on about this, but we'll get into that later. The winter solstice in Egypt. From around 3000 BC onward, ancient Egyptians linked the solstices to Nile floods and the sun god Ra, with temples oriented to celestial events. The Karnak Temple, this is so amazing, aligns with the solstice sunrise, illuminating ancient shrines. Several ancient Egyptian temples are aligned with the winter solstice sunrise, including the Temple of Amun-Ra at Karnak, the Chapel of Ra Horkhakti and Abu Simbel at the Mortuary Temple of Hatshepsut at Luxor, built during the reign of Pharaoh Hatshepsut of the 18th dynasty of Egypt. Plutarch, a Greco-Roman philosopher, historian, biographer, essayist, and priest of the Temple of Apollo at Delphi, wrote in the Moralia, the first century AD, the 0-100s, that the Egyptians believed the goddess Isis gave birth to Harpocrates, Horus, at the winter solstice. In the 4th century, the 300s AD, Epiphanius of Salamis, the bishop of Salamis, which was Cyprus at the time, and considered a saint by Eastern Orthodox Catholic churches, as well as some of the Presbyterians, wrote that the winter solstice was celebrated on December 25th in Alexandria as the Kekelia. He said that 13 days after the solstice, on January 5th or 6th, they celebrated the birth of Ion, son of the virgin goddess Kor, which is another name for Persephone. Associated with time, the orb encompassing the universe and the zodiac. And at the temple of Kor, Persephone, an all-night vigil was held, and at dawn, an idol child god, was brought out of an underground shrine and then carried around the temple 7 times, accompanied by music, hymns, and revelry. The new sun in Rome. In ancient Rome, as discussed in our last episode, Saturnalia, which is held around the winter solstice, involved feasting, gift giving, and role reversals, among many other things. This holiday later influenced the timing and some customs of Christmas. In the ancient Roman calendar, December 25th was the date of the winter solstice, which is, but today is Christmas, the 25th, which is not the solstice. Marcus Terentius Varro, a Roman polemist and prolific author that was regarded as ancient Rome's greatest scholar, wrote in the 1st century BC that December 25th, this is the 1st century before Christ, that December 25th was regarded as the middle of winter. In that same century, Ovid wrote in the Fasti, which was left incomplete when he was exiled to Thomas by the Emperor Augustus in the year 8 AD, that the winter solstice was the first day of the new sun. The calendar of Antiochus at Athens, an influential Hellenistic astrologer who flourished sometime between the late 1st and mid-2nd century AD, so maybe sometime between the 0-100s and the year 150, marks December 25th as the birthday of the sun. In 274 AD, the Emperor Aurelian made December 25th, the Emperor made December 25th the festival Die Natalis Soli Invicti, the birthday of Sol Invictus, or the invincible sun, the official sun god of the late Roman Empire, and replacement for the old Latin god Sol. Many historians now generally accept that the winter solstice influence, the choice of December 25th, as the date of the birth of Jesus Christ. A widely held theory is that the Roman Catholic Church chose this day as Jesus' birthday, Die Natalis Christi, in order to appropriate the Roman festival of the sun god's birthday, Die Natalis Solis Invicti. Canadian Kensington Market Festival. I had to include this because it's so fun and cute. Toronto's Kensington Market Festival, I gotta get there one day, offers street performances and theatrical events welcoming the sun. A choir of La Befana, which origins are from Italy, the Good Christmas Witches, sing at this festival of lights and gather in the streets to give candy to children. Men, women, and children dress in La Befana costumes and sing love songs to serenade and beckon the return of the sun. I see you, Canada. That's awesome. Not that everything else isn't, but that's fun. So now, I would be remiss if I don't at least touch on a little bit of this. Again, Native American traditions are by no means my area of expertise, but I still wanted to at least share a few tidbits about some of the different Native cultures and their Yule practices, because just hopefully out of respect anyway. There are a number of winter solstice celebrations among different Native nations from South to North America. The general term used to describe the winter solstice for Native people is welcoming the return of the light on Turtle Island. I had an amazing personal experience one time meeting with this incredible Native family who took me in for a day and shared with me some of the history of their culture and generation from the turtle, and I would love to get into that, but I don't feel like it's my place to share that. Hopefully at some point we can have a guest or that can share all of that with you, because it's really beautiful. And I'm so appreciative for that experience. Anyway, in New Mexico, the Zuni Pueblo people hold the multi-day Xalaco festival around the solstice, selected by religious leaders. Men embody giant bird deities to carry prayers for rain and balance to the world's corners, ensuring well-being for the tribe and the earth. In Arizona, the Hopi conduct the Soyal Seminary ceremony, invoking Kashina spirits through dances, songs, and prayer sticks to welcome longer days. In Montana, the Blackfeet mark the solstice as the return of Natosi, the sun, historically facing eastward and noting astronomical events in their calendar. Today, some engage in quiet reflection and games rather than formal rituals. In Mississippi, where much of my family is from, Cahokia descendants and Mississippians aligned ancient sites like Woodhenge with solstice sunrises for sun deity veneration, influencing modern rituals honoring the sun as the giver of life. And in general, in the United States, the Sioux and related plains groups observe the winter solstice with prayer, drumming, and renewal rites. So now just a quick rundown of some of the gods and goddesses that are associated with Yule. And I'm aware that different people have different connections with different gods or goddesses depending upon where they are in their personal life or just how they resonate or commune with whomever they feel close to or develop a relationship with. And this is just a small list So Hairn, of course, is also known as Cairnunnos, and the duality of the Oak King, the light half, and the Holly King, the dark half. The triple goddess, maiden, mother, crone, representing the cycles of life, with the crone aspect being prominent during the winter. Odin, the all-father and Yule father, leader of the wild hunt, god of wisdom and magic, and for whom our day of the week, Wednesday, is named after. Balder, son of Odin and Frigga, and the beloved god of light, purity, beauty, and joy, is associated with mistletoe and known for his radiant goodness. Frigga, goddess of foresight and motherhood, who declared mistletoe as a plant of love rather than death to honor her son Balder, whose brother Hodur was tricked by Loki into killing him with a spear of it. Frau Hole, Scandinavian goddess associated with evergreen plants, snowfall, the hearth, and the wild, who shakes down snow from her feathery bed. Skadi, Norse goddess of winter skiing in the mountains. Kale, the old woman of winter, who is a hag-like Celtic goddess of storms and the wild. Lu, the Celtic sun god, who is often associated with King Arthur and represents growing light. Dionysus Bacchus, the party god of wine, revelry, and rebirth celebrated during the December festival Brumalia. And Mithras, Roman sun god, born around the winter solstice and symbolizing rebirth. Now, just because it's fun, let's spend a few minutes just touching on some spooky Yule deities. And I think most of us have heard of, or at least are a little bit familiar with, Krampus, who is a horned demonic figure from Central European folklore who appears on December 5th, Krampusnacht, and punishes misbehaved children by beating them with birch branches, chaining them, and stuffing them into his sack to drag them to his lair and eat or drown them. He's a goat-like furry creature with hooves, horns, fangs, and a lolling tongue. Oh, Krampus. Miss Gryla, the Christmas witch, and her little Yule lads, not so little, derives from Icelandic folklore. She lives together as a family in a cave along with her 13 Yule lads. She's an ogress with an appetite for the flesh of mischievous children. She descends from the mountains during Yule time to hunt for children and carry them home in her giant sack to cook them in her stew pot. Her Yule lads are menacing little pranksters who steal from and harass households. However, they do kindly leave small gifts in the shoes that children leave on their windowsills, unless the children were naughty, in which case they instead leave them a rotten potato in their shoe. Each Yule lad appears on a different day, starting on December 12th, and each of them wreaking havoc, for 13 days that end on January 6th. A few examples of these little not-so-little scamps are Stubby, who steals pans for the food baked to the bottoms and the brims. Spoon Licker, who steals wooden spoons. Bowl Licker, who hides under beds waiting for bowls to be left on the floor. Sausage Swiper, who hides in the rafters and waits to steal smoked sausage. Meat Hook, who uses a hook to steal meat, and so on. Now, as fun as this folklore is, if you think about it, often folklore comes from some element of truth, which really kind of is very sad to me, right? So we see a little bit of a trend here. These boys are said to be extremely thin, malnourished, and hungry, orphans. Their mother, Gryla, sustaining them with stew that she makes from kidnapped children. So considering the origins and the time, I hate to think that this has some factual elements, but I can't help but believe that it probably does. This woman of the mountains and the cave and her 13 Yule lads would scavenge in the winter for food. And Miss Gryla didn't stop with just, you know, scraping pans and licking spoons. She did kidnap children from the town and made stew. So, so Miss Gryla and the Yule lads also had a pet called the Yule Cat. This poor kitty. He is said to be huge and vicious, described as lurking the snowy countryside during Yule time and eating people who didn't get any new clothes to wear before Christmas Eve. So, is not having new Christmas clothes considered naughty? Well, this traditional lore is said to have been used as a threat, an incentive for farm workers to finish processing the wool that was collected in autumn before Christmas. Those that helped to collect and process the wool were rewarded with new clothes. But if you didn't help, then you wouldn't get any new clothes, and then would be prey for the Yule Cat. Yule Cat is very disobedient, and he only responds to the direction from the smallest Yule lad, Stuffy, who is said to ride the cat across the countryside, which I find kind of cute, right? He's a naughty little boy and the naughty giant cat. However, keep in mind that cats will, in fact, even eat their own owners in reality in instances of extreme hunger. So sometimes only within hours, which may have also contributed to the legend of this hungry cat feeding on people that didn't have a source of warmth in the winter. So it stands to reason that this big naughty kitty, the Yule Cat, would feed on the near dead or newly dead. Kind of gruesome, the old folklore, yeah? There you have it. But now, the Yule log which is often oak tradition, began as an ancient pagan winter solstice ritual in Northern Europe, celebrating the return of the sun with the burning of a large log for good fortune. The practice involved bringing a huge log into the home, lighting it with embers from the previous year's log, and feasting and partying until it burned out, symbolizing hope and driving away evil. The Yule log is sometimes decorated with holly and pine and carved with images such as those of Norse gods. In Old Norse tradition, the log would be lit and everyone would sit around it telling stories and feasting. Every morning, if it went out, it would be lit again and burned for all 12 days of celebrating. Most Scandinavian people were, back then, illiterate. So, storytelling was a crucial way to pass along tales of adventures, family traditions, and stories of the gods. But beware. Always beware. If the Yule log goes out too soon, it's a terrible omen, signaling bad luck, misfortune, and trouble for the family in the coming year. You gotta tend to that log. Allowing the fire to burn out before the end of 12 days opens the home to malevolent spirits. Also, watch out. If you see a shadow without a head in the fire, it means the head of the house will die within the year. Eek. After the 12 days, a piece of the Yule log or some of its ashes are saved and stored under the bed for protection in the coming year. And then you use that to help start the next year's fire. But oh, those cute, adorable, and delicious little gingerbread men. Are they simply a fun to decorate savory little treat? Or is there a deeper, more historical meaning? Of course there is. In medieval England, gingerbread men were actually love tokens used by women to attract suitors. Much like mistletoe is a symbol of fertility and encourages kissing, gingerbread men are also a sort of love spell. Queen Elizabeth I had gingerbread men baked to look like visiting dignitaries and gave them as cute little courtly gifts. And the young women in medieval England ate the gingerbread men, hoping to attract a husband. In fact, gingerbread cookies are traditionally made with spices like ginger, cinnamon, and cloves, which have long been considered aphrodisiacs due to their warming and stimulating effects on the body. Ginger is said to increase blood flow and circulation and enhance sensitivity and arousal. Louis XV's mistress, Madame du Barry, I don't know if I said that right, was sent to serve ginger to her lovers to set the mood. Other ingredients were actually later forbidden. They were actually forbidden in medieval times because of their perceived use as love potions. So get baking if you're on the hunt. So the Yule ritual altar, this is a photo of my own Yule altar here in the background. Not to say that there aren't a lot of other, that I don't have a lot of other decorations and tributes around my home, but in addition to my altar, I don't necessarily decorate outdoor trees, but I will spread like berries and seeds outdoors under the trees for the birds and the other wildlife. But just as a simple demonstration, the ash pot is at the northern point of the altar, pentacle pointed north in the center, athame just below that, wand below that, to the west, your bell, chalice, black candle, clear quartz, pillar crystal pointing toward you, on the east, anointing oil, thurible center, censer, matches, white candle, clear quartz, crystal pointing away from you. Decorate with the colors red, green, gold, white, and silver, holly, lights, reindeer and stag, rubies and emeralds. It's of your own choosing. If you want to add a statue of your chosen deities in the north, I have toward the back there my statue of Hern. Some may also add offerings of herbs, milk, honey, wine, homemade bread, etc. So, the Yule Feast and just some other little stuff here. Merry Yule. I'm a couple of days late posting this episode, but we're still during Yule time. I was hoping to post it on the winter solstice, but some things came up, but we're okay. Enjoy your feast of dried fruits, roasted meats, pig, usually, like ham, baked cinnamon apples, treats seasoned with nutmeg and ginger, peppermint nuts, chestnuts, and red cabbage. Enjoy a glass of wine and some warm cups of herbal tea. Tell tales and play games. Exchange nature-based and practical gifts as symbols of your sacrifice to the goddess and gods. Ring in each morning with bells after everyone in the home has awakened in order to chase away dark days. And remember, don't let that Yule log go out. So that's it for this episode. I know there's so very much that we didn't go over, but there's only so much time. Thank you for joining me on this mystical and magical journey exploring the season of Yule. Don't forget to like this episode and follow us by clicking the buttons below. Find our website with articles, workshops, events, and shopping at spiritartsandherbs.com. On our website, you can find and buy hundreds of high-quality herbs, crystals, gemstones, intention and ritual candles, incenses, and more. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, and find our podcasts on Patreon, Castos, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Amazon Podcast, and iHeartRadio. Links are in the below description. Share this with even one friend. Your support means the world and helps me, us, keep providing content that we know you love and we love so much. So until next time, merry meet, merry part, merry we meet again, and blessed be. Happy Yule, everyone.